You're listening to Bible Prophecy Daily, a weekday podcast where Bible prophecy matters and matters greatly.
Part one, I gave some context to one of the most common interpretations for the post-trib view of how they view the framework of the Book of Revelation, which they view the septets, the sets of sevens, the seals, trumpets, and bowls, as occurring roughly at the same time, or at least they would say that they are the same events. For example, the fifth seal is the fifth trumpet and the fifth bowl. Nevertheless, they would say that they are concurrent. They all occur concurrent or in a recapitulatory fashion. So what I'm going to do in this episode, I am going to give you about 10 reasons why that is not the case, and instead the framework of the seals, trumpets, and the bowls should be seen as a consecutive, progressive outworking of these septets instead of a concurrent, recapitulatory fashion. But let me just review for review's sake what these two frameworks of the Book of Revelation, how do they understand these septets? So the concurrent recapitulation framework, namely held by post-tribulationist, it's not only post-tribulationist, quite a few amillennialists would hold to this view as well. Of course, the vast majority of amillennialists would hold to this view. So it's not just exclusive to a subset premillennial view of post-tribulationism, but it's probably, I would argue, the most common view of interpretation of the Book of Revelation when it comes to this issue. Okay, so the concurrent recapitulation view subscribes to this idea that the framework of the septets, they occur at the same time with the judgment elements giving different emphases or perspectives. So, for example, it's said that the sixth seal, sixth trumpet, sixth bowl describe the same event from a different angle, or again, so in other words, the last element in the day of the Lord's wrath describes the seventh of each septet, okay? And therefore, they would say that the seventh seal, seventh trumpet, seventh bowl is the same event from different perspectives. There are post-tribulationists who hold that it does not describe the exact same event, but again, they affirm that it would be, for example, three different elements occurring roughly at the same time. And for all practical purposes, the main point here is that both of these post-trib or all-millennial interpretations do not view the trumpets and bowls occurring after the seventh seal is opened. Let me repeat that again. Whatever variation within the concurrent recapitulation view one holds to, they all agree that they do not view the trumpets and the bowls occurring after the seventh seal is opened. Instead, they would view the trumpets and the bowls occurring before the seventh seal is opened. That is key. Okay, and again, I'll have in the show notes, just like in episode 36, in episode 37 here, I will have two charts that will illustrate these two different views. So, and as I mentioned in the previous episode, the debate does not hinge on whether each element, whether each judgment element within the septets succeed each other. That, again, that's not the issue. The main issue is, does each of the three septets themselves succeed each other? That is, are they consecutive or not, or do they simultaneously unfold? that is in a concurrent fashion. So, okay, and the concurrent progressive view, which the pre-wrath, premillennial view would hold to, and by the way, pre-tribulationists, this is something we pre-tribulationists would agree with us on, and that is that the seals, trumpets, and bowl judgments unfold in that consecutive progressive fashion. Of course, we would disagree on the nature, not so much the sequential nature of it, but the qualitative nature of the septets. For example, pre-tribs would, of course, say that, well, the seals are God's wrath, or at least the first six seals are God's wrath. And we would say, no, the first six seals are not God's wrath. The church will be here for that. It is the seventh seal, when the seventh seal is opened, between the sixth and seventh seal, there's this great multitude delivered to heaven. We would say that's, how more descriptive can you get here, that that would be the raptured people of God. And then it's all pointing toward the seventh seal being opened. I like to say that the fifth seal promises God's wrath. The sixth seal portends God's wrath. The chapter seven and the two groups of people being protected shows a protection of God's wrath, the future wrath, that is. And then, of course, the seventh seal is only until the seventh seal occurs will the day of the Lord's, the eschatological day of the Lord's wrath, will be pronounced. Beautiful consistency there, beautiful progression. So, and of course, God's wrath is realized in the trumpet and the bowl judgments. So a consecutive progressive view would hold that the sequential chronological framework for the seals, trumpets, and bowls is, so you have the, you know, the seal, trumpet, bowl judgments, the sets of sevens will happen in a consecutive progressive fashion with each septet consecutively following each other. For example, the trumpet septet cannot begin until the seventh seal is opened, and the bowl septet cannot begin before the seventh trumpet is blown. The last judgment element of the day of the Lord's wrath will be the seventh bowl. So accordingly, the seventh seal and the seventh trumpet serve as transitions to the next set of God's climaxing judgments, of course, culminating with the seventh bowl. Okay, so I'm going to give you about 10 reasons why the intended understanding of the septets should be understood in a progressive or a concurrent fashion. And this first reason I'm going to give, is I think it is the absolute best argument for the concurrent view. In fact, I believe that we do not need, if it was just this argument, we didn't have the other arguments, this would be sufficient in itself, because it could not be more explicit to show the sequential view, that is, or to show that the trumpets come after the opening of the seventh seal. You cannot have the trumpets occurring before the seventh seal. In other words, no one can read the it's going to be Revelation 8 or chapter 8, and no one is going to be able to read this chapter and then walk away and say, oh, the trumpets occur before the seventh seal. So here's the text, all right? And the argument, I've labeled it as the seventh seal prepares for the trumpets. Okay, Revelation, starting Revelation 8, verse 1. When the Lamb opened the seventh seal, there was silence in heaven. Okay, now, just right there, the seventh seal is open, okay? When the seventh seal is open, what's going to happen? All right, you have to ask yourself that. Well, okay, there's silence in heaven for about a half an hour. Well, what does silence do? It prepares. It prepares for something ominous. Verse 2, then I saw the seven angels who stand before God, and get this, they had seven trumpets were given to them. Okay, I mean, that's pretty explicit right there. Well, what are they going to do with those seven trumpets? Well, let's look. Verse 3, and another angel came and stood at the altar with a gold censer, and he was given much incense to offer with the prayers of all the saints on the golden altar before the throne. And the smoke of the incense with the prayers of the saints rose before God in the hand of the angel. Now, where did these prayers of the saints come from? Well, back in the fifth seal, there's martyrs, you know, praying about, you know, vindication for their blood, right? God's holiness. God, when are you going to avenge? When are you going to pour out your eschatological wrath upon the wicked who have murdered us, right? Well, here's the link to these prayers. And so it makes sense that they're here because the wrath of God is about to happen with the seven trumpet judgments. Verse 5, and the angel took the censer, filled it with fire from the altar, and threw it on the earth, and there were peals of thunder, rumbling, flashes of lightning, and an earthquake. Okay, so right now we have, what's going on here? The seventh seal is being opened. There is half an hour of silence. There's a contrast between a half an hour of silence, and then that's followed by what? Loudness. Silence, loudness, right? Peals of thunder, rumblings, flash of lightning, and an earthquake. Loud. All right? And then look at verse 6. Now, the seven angels who had the seven trumpets, what did they do? It says they prepared to blow them. It doesn't say they already blew them before the seventh seal is open. It says they prepared to blow them. Tradition can make rational people read a text and completely torture the plain meaning of a text. I'm sorry, but anyone who reads this text and says, oh, no, the trumpets come before the opening of the seventh seal. Folks, you have to really question the blind tradition of many people who hold to a recapitulatory view of the text. A plain discourse analytical reading of the narrative shows an obvious, explicit cause and effect action happening here. The seventh seal is opened, and what happens? There is silence in heaven. Angels are given trumpets, and they're prepared to blow them. And then, of course, they're eventually blown in verse 7, starting verse 7, where it says, the first angel blew his trumpet, and there followed hell, fire, mixed in blood, and they were thrown upon the earth. And then you can read the narrative, the rest of the trumpets judgments in chapter 8 and 9 show the realization of God's wrath. But like I said, right now I can push the button here that says end, and we're done. I mean, this argument in itself completely undermines the recapitulatory argument, the concurrent view. And so if you're ever in an argument with a post-tribulationist who's arguing, oh, the trumpets, you know, they are aligned with the seven seals or something like that, take them to this text. This is the text that you want to begin with. This clear text, this is not ambiguous. This is right here. When the seventh seal is opened, seven angels are given seven trumpets. Now, you might be saying, well, Alan, what? There has to be a response from all millennials. There are. Well, there's one in particular. Well, there's two things that they do. Number one, they'll run away from this text and they'll ignore it, and they'll try to find some other arguments. Okay. Just like what they do, you know, all millennialists do with Revelation 20. Or they will say, oh, no, Alan, don't, you're being confused by the versification here. In verse 2, or even the chapter divisions here, they'll say, well, no. Verse 1, Revelation 8, verse 1, goes with the previous chapter, which I agree. It does. That's right. And then they'll say, but verse 2 is really where the chapter should begin. Well, of course, you can say that, but you have to give that little thing called evidence. And there's no evidence at all to make a to disrupt the narrative here. That makes no sense. So the seventh seal is open, there is silence in heaven. Oh, bam, that's it. End of narrative. Really? What's the effect of the seventh seal is being opened? I mean, when the seventh trumpet is opened, there's an effect. When the seventh bowl is mentioned, there's an effect. But somehow we're told to believe, oh no, there's no content of the seventh seal here. No, I'm sorry, but there's a cause and effect action. There's silence in heaven. You're not going to tell me that, okay, you're going to have silence in heaven, verse 1, but the contrast to the breaking of silence with the peals of thunder, rumblings, flash, lightning, and earthquake, oh no, that's completely disconnected with the silence. No, I'm sorry. That's just tradition torturing the clear flow of the text. So again, this argument this argument I call the seventh seal prepares for the trumpets. That's Revelation 8, chapter 1, chapter 8, verses 1 through 6. That this text undermines the most common interpretation of the book of Revelation. Let me repeat that again. This text in itself sufficiently undermines the amillennial and, again, the subset view of premillennialism of the post-tribune, the most common understanding of the framework of the book of Revelation. This text undermines their view that teaches that the trumpets happen before the seventh seal. No, the narrative here shows that the seventh seal prepares for the trumpets. The trumpets have to happen after the seventh seal. You cannot, I repeat, you cannot read this text and walk away honestly and say that, oh, the trumpets happened before the seventh seal is opened. I'm sorry, but that's a complete tortured twisting of scripture. Well, I want to make one other quick point, and that is on this, and that is the scholar I cited him last week, Jahanian, I think that's how you pronounce his name. He makes a great point about regarding the silence. This is important, this notion of silence here in the narrative. He writes, the recapitulation theory would be more convincing if the sixth seal were silence and the seventh the end, and not vice versa. This is a great point, by the way. Great point. Let me just start over here. He says the recapitulation theory would be more convincing if the sixth seal were silence and the seventh seal, quote, the end, and not vice versa, as John has them. And then he goes on, he says, Bill, that's Greg Bill, who wrote a popular commentary on the book of Revelation, he says, Bill attempts to address this problem by claiming that it is, quote, clear from repeated references to silence in the Old Testament and Jewish apocalyptic writings that silence is a figurative expression of judgment. He is correct in seeking a link between silence and judgment in the primary Old Testament background text he adduces, Habakkuk 2:20, Zephaniah 1:7, Zechariah 2:13. However, the context of these references to silence suggests that silence is not an expression of judgment, but rather something that precedes judgment and or the day of the Lord. Thus, in Zephaniah, the reason for silence is given in the same verse, quote, "For the day of the Lord is near." This is a great point. When you look at Old Testament references, in when you have the silence in conjunction to eschatological wrath, it is preparing for judgment, and this is consistent here in the seventh seal. This seventh seal is opened, so we should not. And then we have silence, half an hour of silence. So we should not be surprised to see the silence here, because something very ominous is going to happen, and that is the day of the Lord's. This unique event is going to happen, the eschatological wrath of God. So given all of this, you know, the seventh seal is the last condition for the scroll, right? The seven seals are on a scroll, and it's only until all seven seals are opened. Then the scroll can be opened, which, of course, encompasses the ensuing trumpet judgments and, of course, the bowl judgments as well. That's what the pre-wrath position would hold to. Okay, let's move on. I'm going to outline some of these other reasons, but I did want to highlight this first reason, because that first reason that of the seventh trumpet preparing for the seventh bowl, I'm sorry, the seventh seal being open prepares for the trumpet judgments. So you can't have the trumpet judgments happening before the seventh seal. But let's look at some other reasons. Number two, the septets increase in intensity and scope. So if you read the narrative of the seals, trumpets, and bowls, it's conspicuous that there's a intensity as you read it. In other words, the trumpets are more intense than the seals. The bowls are more intense than the trumpets, and the seals, the nature of the seals, they exhibit natural events. Wars, famine, plague, bloodshed. While the trumpets and bowls exhibit supernatural events, such as hideous demonic creatures torturing the wicked, right? Massive divine devastation on the earth. And further, the scope of activity, by the way, progressively intensifies. For example, the fourth seal mentions a quarter of the earth. The trumpets, a third of the earth. And, of course, the bowls affect the entire earth. This is something that, again, amillennialists and post-tribulationists selectively leave out of their conclusions. And so in addition, the seals, last point I want to mention, the seals, they encompass believers and unbelievers. Okay, so you have two groups, right? Believers and unbelievers, with the trumpets targeting specifically the ungodly. Okay, see the shift from believers and unbelievers during the seals, but the trumpets, though, target the wicked, which I believe because the rapture has happened already. That's the focus here now. Between the seals and the trumpets, you have the rapture. While the bowls are directed to the ungodly, there is though a focus on the beast's kingdom and his subjects. For example, the bowls 1, 3, 5, and 6. You see how it's not just a progression of intensity, but there is a shift, a honing in on... let me put it this way. There's an intensity of the scope, okay? There is a enlargement of, in a global sense, but there's also there seems to be a shift in audience, okay? And these factors, they demonstrate the septets. They don't simply, recapitulate. I don't just find, hey, if you come to a problems passage in Revelation, it seems like the way to resolve that and say, oh, it's recapitulatory. well, again, you can say that, but it doesn't make it so. You have to have evidence. And evidence is primarily demonstrated through discourse analytical methods, okay? You know, cohesion analysis is a good example. So again, they demonstrate that the septets, they don't recapitulate the same events. Instead, they exhibit three separate consecutive series of judgments, okay? There's not one series of judgments. There are three separate consecutive sequential series of judgments. The seals function as precursors to the day of the Lord's wrath. The trumpets initiate his wrath, and the bowls execute the completion of his wrath. That's the progression. Again, the progression is the seals function as, again, you have to ask, what is the function, right? The seals function as precursors to the day of the Lord's wrath. The trumpets function as it initiates and executes God's wrath. And the bowl judgments, as we'll see, explicitly indicate that they are the completion of God's wrath. Okay, another reason here is that, let me just outline here to finish up soon. A confirmation from Jesus. Jesus is teaching on the beginning of birth pains, the great tribulation, the celestial sign, and the gathering of the elect correspond with the with the seven seals. And I can leave a link to a chart that shows this, okay? Well, let me just maybe mention it real quick. So you have parallels between Matthew 24 and Revelation 6 to 7. There's a beautiful consistency on here where the first seal corresponds with Antichrist / false Christ, second seal wars, third seal famines, the fourth seal is martyrdom, great tribulation, fifth seal result of martyrdom, great tribulation, sixth seal celestial disturbances, the interlude raptured saints, and then the seventh seal day of the Lord's wrath. And in Matthew 24, that exact same sequence happens. And again, I'll leave a link in the show notes for that. But so Jesus warned not to confuse the end with the beginning of the birth pains. And yet many people do that today when they read Revelation. Jesus taught that the great tribulation. So you have the beginning in Matthew 24. You have the beginning birth pains. Then you have the great tribulation, which is going to happen before the return, and that will be Jesus's return will be signaled by the celestial disturbances, which is of course corresponds with the sixth seal, and this supports that the seals should be distinguished from the wrath in the trumpets and the bowls. And again, I'll leave a link in the show notes for that. Okay, moving on. Another good reason is that the fifth seal martyrs point to the wrath of God. You can't have the trumpets happening during the fifth seal martyrs. So the fifth seal martyrs, right, in Revelation 6, they cry out to God for justice and they implore him to avenge their blood. Quote, "How long, sovereign master, holy and true, before you judge those who live on the earth? And avenge our blood," Revelation 6:10. And this clearly shows that the day of the Lord's wrath has not begun. And so to place any trumpet or bowl judgments before the fifth seal it's a contradiction. That's a contradiction. You can't do it. The fifth seal martyrs are crying out to God. They receive a divine answer and say, wait a little bit longer, it's going to happen. But yet you have people putting the trumpet judgments during the fifth seal and even before the fifth seal. You can't do that. So many post-tribulations do this. It's just, wow. Again, in episode 36, I explained the first part. I explained why post-tribulations do this because they have certain presuppositions that force them. They force them to skew their data. They force into this framework. And you can go back and listen to what those presuppositions are in at alankirshner.com slash alankirshner.com/36. You can listen to those. Okay, another reason is that the sixth seal celestial event points to God's future wrath. You can't have the trumpets or the bowls happening before the sixth seal. So the sixth seal signals an impending wrath of God, not the culmination of it. That's important. Think about this. The sixth seal is not signaling the completion of God's wrath as the concurrent recapitulatory view would have us to think. No, the sixth seal signals the impending wrath of God, not the end of it. And it corresponds, for example, to Joel's parallel passage in Joel 2:30-31. It says, I will produce portents both in the sky and on the earth, blood, fire, columns of smoke. The sunlight will be turned to darkness and the moon to the color of blood before the day of the Lord comes, that great and terrible day. And in the sixth seal, the celestial disturbances, it causes the ungodly in the sixth seal to flee to the caves because they recognize the impending wrath of God, Revelation 6, verses 15 to 17. And by the way, Luke also narrates the wrath of God ensuing the celestial event. You can read that in Luke 21, verses 25 to 36, and cross-reference Matthew 24, 29 to 30. So it's mistaken to place any trumpet or bowl judgments before the sixth seal. You can't do it. Your system or your conclusion is going to be inconsistent. Okay, let me give you another reason. We got a few more reasons to go, so I'm going to move along here. This is actually this reason also is a sufficient reason that completely undermines the concurrent view. And that is, I call it, the destruction of the earth happens after, not before, the seventh seal. So in Revelation 7, there's an interlude portraying two groups of people being delivered, protected, one on earth and the other in heaven. Okay, the group on earth are seen to be 144,000 Jews. A seal is given on their foreheads as protection from the coming wrath. Quote, do not damage, listen to this, do not damage the earth or the sea or the trees until we have put a seal on the foreheads of the servants of our God. This verse should put to rest any doubt trumpet and bowls should happen before the seventh seal. Now you might ask, well, how can that be? Why does that one verse undermine the concurrent recapitulatory interpretation? Well, notice that the earth, sea, and trees are not destroyed up to this point before the seventh seal is opened, right? They're not destroyed up to this point. It's only when the seventh seal is opened that the first two trumpet judgments begin to destroy the earth, sea, and trees. Listen to this. Revelation 8, verses 7 through 9 says, the first angel blew his trumpet, and there was hell and fire mixed with blood, and it was thrown at the earth, so that a third of the earth was burned up, a third of the trees were burned up, and all the grass, green grass, was burned up. Then the second angel blew his trumpet. Something like a great mountain of burning fire was thrown into the sea. A third of the sea became blood, and a third of the creatures living in the sea died, and a third of the ships were completely destroyed. What is the logical conclusion here? The logical conclusion is that it's a contradiction by post-tribs and amillennialists to claim otherwise. You have a cause and effect. In Revelation 7, you have the command not to damage the earth or the sea or the trees until we have put a seal on the foreheads of the servants of God. So up to chapter up to the seventh seal, nature has, at least in terms of the sea, the trees have not been destroyed by God's wrath. Okay. And then you have, once again, a cause and effect action here. And then once the seventh seal is opened, the first couple trumpet judgments, they destroy then the they begin to destroy the earth and burn up all the green grass and the trees. You can't get around this. I mean, how you can't explain away, you can't put the trumpets before this, before the 144,000 receive the seal on their foreheads. You can't do it. Folks, this isn't even, you don't need a PhD in Greek to understand this. This is the logical narrative here. There's a basic narrative. There's cause and effect action. People think apocalyptic language is just arbitrary. They don't understand the nature of it. There's a logic to apocalyptic language. And you can't make apocalyptic language say whatever you want it or fit into your system. There is a logic to it. Moreover, the fifth trumpet describes demonic locust creatures being commanded, you know, not to damage, quote, not to damage the grass of the earth or any green plant or tree, but only those people who do not have the seal of God on their forehead. See that right there? Once again, you can't have the trumpet judgments happening before the opening of the seventh seal. You can't do it. This trumpet judgment, again, it has in view, the fifth trumpet judgment has in view the protective seal on their forehead. Thus, it is a contradiction to place the fifth seal before the seventh seal. So it's not just Revelation 8. It's not just the first two trumpet judgments that demonstrate this, but the fifth trumpet actually even mentions it again because it says, do not damage the grass of the earth or any green plant or tree, but only those people who did not have the seal of God on their forehead. Revelation 9:4 is just devastating. I mean, compare Revelation 9:4. Open up your Bible. Look at Revelation 9:4 and look at Revelation 7:3. And you tell me, oh, the trumpet judgments happen before the seventh seal. And I'm going to tell you, you are blind. You are blind to the obvious meaning of the text, and you have to torture scripture to fit your tradition. I'm sorry. I know that sounds harsh. Okay, let's move on. All right. Another reason, what I call whoa, whoa, whoa. Now, the last three trumpets are identified ominously as the three woes. Greek term is ue. So ue, ue, ue. Revelation 8:13 says, then I looked and I heard an eagle flying directly overhead proclaiming with a loud voice, woe, woe, woe to those who live on the earth because the remaining sounds of the trumpets of the three angels who are about to blow them. Now, that text right there tells me, now we're dealing with the end of the trumpets and introducing bowl judgments. These three woes, what they do is they convey the finality and the intensity of God's wrath, along with the devastating, you know, the painful effects upon the wicked. So this temporal language here, we have temporal language in Revelation 9:12, which also this corroborates that this shows a past action. We don't determine past action by verb tenses. That's if you ever hear anyone say, oh, the aorist or the perfect tense in Greek, that's the past action. No, it's not. They don't understand. That's a traditional misunderstanding. We know today that's not true. That's an old 19th century grammatical myth of Greek verb tenses, that the aorist and perfect tenses and as well as imperfect indicate past tense. No, it doesn't. What indicates past tense is called context. Verb systems, what they, their semantic value, grammaticalize what's called aspect. I'm not going to get into that right now, but it's context. Context gives us our theology, not verb tenses, not even words. Words don't even give us theology. It's text, context, text, relationship between statements. Okay, so the temporal, there's temporal language we can get, you know, again, context. Also, let me in part of that context, there's temporal indicators like adverbs, obviously adverbs, right? So in Revelation 9:12, shows a past action because it says the first woe has passed, the future action, that is, but two woes are still coming after these things. What this does, it demonstrates two things. Number one, the trumpet judgments follow a sequence. And number two, they show uniqueness, distinguishing them from the seals and the bowl judgments. Therefore, the trumpet judgments are not the seals and bowls, quote, expressed from different perspectives. So anyone who says that the trumpet judgments are in the trumpet and the bowl judgments, you know, they're in the seals, they're just the same thing, but they're expressed from different perspectives. No, they're not. Because here's another reason why not. Because the woes, these three woes, they indicate uniqueness and they indicate sequence, okay? And they indicate finality, those three things. Okay, another reason, let's move on, incompatible depictions. Now, the concurrent theory loves to point out similarities between the septets. And, especially between the trumpets and the bowl judgments. For example, they argue that, well, it's the fourth trumpet and the fourth bowl relates to the sun, right? You hear this all the time. Oh, therefore it must be a concurrent fashion. Then they just like make this sweeping generalization about the septets. You know, the fourth trumpet and the fourth bowl has to do with the sun. Well, therefore they must refer to the same event, or at least occur at the same time, they'll say. This is the fallacy of similarity equals identity. Find that all the time with post-tribs. The fallacy of similarity must equal identity. And that's a fallacy. But what you have to do is, like, for example, in this instance, on a closer examination, it actually shows that these are divergent elements, not the same ones. For example, in the fourth trumpet, the sun is partially darkened, okay? But in contrast, the fourth bowl, it depicts heat scorching the ungodly. Okay, well, how is that identity, see? There's no necessary evidence here that shows that it must refer to the same thing. I mean, yeah, you can have similarities in judgments. I mean, one could say, hey, these, you know, and people have made this observation, there's similarities with the plagues on Egypt back in Exodus. Well, are the plagues on Egypt the same thing as the future eschatological God's wrath? Are these the exact same events? Well, of course not. No one would even begin to argue that. That's absurd. Okay, well, that shows that you can't assume similarity equals identity, okay? Okay, so moving on here. Another reason, theophonic lightning, thunder, and earthquake. So the climatic theophonic judgment in the seventh seal, and they love to cite this one. It says the seventh bowl, you know, they'll say that the final judgment of the septets demonstrate unequivocally the recapitulatory concurrent interpretation. But there's a problem with that. Let's look at, for example, Revelation 16:18. It reads, "Then there were flashes of lightning, roaring, and crashes of thunder, and there was a tremendous earthquake, an earthquake unequaled since humanity has been on the earth. So tremendous was that earthquake." So tremendous was that earthquake. Well, they will point to this verse and go, see, when you compare this verse to Revelation 8:5 or Revelation 11:19, there's similar theophonic statements in those passages. And actually, if you want to go back to Revelation 4:5 as well. But again, once again, the concurrent interpreters They argue that these instances, they represent the same event because of their similarity. But again, similarity does not equal identity. In fact, in this example, again, when you have a closer reading, it shows that in each instance of these theophonic depictions, there's actually an intensification and it anticipates Revelation 16, 18. You see that? They kind of just like, they flatten out the character of these respective theophonic judgments. They just like kind of broad brush instead of looking at the specifics. But when you look at the specifics, you see that Revelation 8 and 5 intensifies and anticipates Revelation 11 and 19. And Revelation 11 and 19 intensifies and anticipates the final judgment, that is Revelation 16, 18. Because in Revelation 16, 18, you have the most intense theophany of them all. That's the consummation of God's judgment. So it's also not clear how a recapitulation could be valid with Revelation 4, 5. Again, portraying the throne room happening before the seals are opened. Think about that one, right? If you want to be consistent, you have to say, oh, the consummation happened in Revelation 4, 5 in the throne room, even before the seals were happened, or before the seals happened. I want to comment, or I want to cite one more time Johannian's comment here on this point. And this is what he says, all right? He says, granted that Revelation 8, 5 and Revelation 11, 19 anticipates chapter 16, 18 through 21. And he says this intensification would seem to indicate that the consummation of temporal judgments is approaching. And not that it's already been reached at Revelation 8, 1 and then recapitulated twice. So in other words, he's saying that it's not plausible. What you have here is an approaching intensification of the theophanies, not some recapitulation. And then he says, thus, in Revelation 8, 5, the formula heralds the coming of God in judgment. It's symbolized by the trumpets. And Revelation 11, 19 looks forward to the pouring out of the bowls. Let me repeat that again. 8 and 5 and 11, 19, it looks forward. It points to the pouring out of the bowl judgments. And the last, and then he says, the last bowl in Revelation 16, 18 through 21 completes the judgments together with an emphasis on the uniqueness of the final earthquake and with the voice from the throne saying, quote, it is done. So again, as I mentioned before, they love to quote this, cite this, the theophonic elements in the book of Revelation. In fact, I think it's one of their most common arguments, actually. And they say, see, they must be concurrent. They're talking about the same thing. But again, when you look at specifics, it shows that the first two or three, if you want to count Revelation 4, 5, theophonic elements, they are pointing to. They don't describe the culmination. They are pointing to. They're introducing the next set of judgments. And then when you actually do read the last judgment, the theophonic judgment in Revelation 16, 18 through 21, you can see the nature, the character of it is a culmination of it, okay? Which is why it says, quote, it is done. And speaking of which, okay, we got two more reasons, but I want to finish up here with two last reasons. One is called God's wrath is finished. In Revelation 15, 1, it reads, then I saw another sign in heaven, great and amazing, seven angels with seven plagues, which are the last. For with them, the wrath of God is finished. Revelation 15, 1, complete, again, it just undermines this whole notion of a concurrent understanding of the of the septets in the book of Revelation. Revelation 15:1 has sequence written all over it. It has consecutiveness written all over it, progression written all over it, because it says the bowl judgments, it says, which are the last. For with them the wrath of God is finished. I mean, I want to tell post-tribulationists and all millennialists, what part of which are the last, for with them the wrath of God is finished, do you not understand? What part of it do you not understand? It's showing that the bowl judgments is the culmination of God's wrath here. It doesn't say the trumpet judgments are the final wrath of God. It says the bowl judgments are. But again, tradition is very strong. Revelation 15:1, the verse contains a sequence of God's wrath, which says, again, the seven plagues, bowls, are last. Eschatos. I mean, the modern pronunciation of the Greek term is eschatos. I say eschatos because it's very common, even though I use a modern pronunciation. But yeah, eschatos is the word here for last. And this strongly implies that the trumpet septet precedes the bowls because, again, quote, with them the wrath of God is finished. Teleo. The wrath of God is finished. Teleo. In other words, the bowl judgments will fulfill God's final purpose in the day of the Lord. And it's simply unnatural for post-tribs and all millennialists to interpret the bowl septet happening at the same time as the trumpet septet. That is not the natural reading. The natural reading instead conveys that the bowl judgments follow the trumpets. Just one last quick reason, and that is actually the imagery of the bowl. This is something that's often not mentioned or talked about, but the trumpet judgments, they require a substantive time to unfold, right? For example, the fifth trumpet lasts how long? 5 months. But in contrast, the nature and the purpose of the bowl judgments occur quickly, rapidly. We know this, I think, because of the very term of bowl being used here, the imagery, you know, post-tribs and all millennialists, they always want to talk about the imagery of apocalyptic language, right? But then when it comes to the imagery of the bowl, they kind of like not mention it, they ignore it. Well, let's talk about the imagery. The New Testament mentions at least 15 different vessels, jars, bowls, baskets, and other types of containers in antiquity. And in our instance, the term for bowl is phiali, meaning a broad, shallow bowl. And this choice of imagery of phiali, of this broad and shallow, this is not arbitrary, because this imagery of this type of bowl, and from what I understand in my research, it was a bowl of like a shallow. So when you throw out the water, typically it was, from what I understand, you know, maybe washing hands or maybe even washing feet. And I'm sure there's other functions for it, but the idea is when you throw it out, it's just you know, it was a quick action, a very swift action of throwing out the water. And I think this imagery is not arbitrary, since it connotes a swift judgment, okay, for pouring out God's final wrath. So it's going to happen very quickly. So the imagery evokes this a salvo, a bowl is being emptied, sort of like, I think, like a grand finale to a fireworks display, in contradistinction to the imagery of the trumpet judgments. Right. Sometimes we forget about the imagery that's being used. So yeah, that's how God's wrath is going to be completed, in a grand finale. It's not going to be anticlimactic. No, it's going to be a grand finale and realized through bowl judgments. And in the pre-wrath schema, by the way, put these in the last 30 days, or 30 days after the 7 years is completed. which makes sense because you have this very brief 30-day period, and how do you, fit God's judgment in, or God's last judgment in that period? Again, it makes complete sense that you have a quick fashion, rapid series of judgments happening within a short period of time after the 7-year period after the 7-year period is completed, because the sixth trumpet judgment will unfold up to the end of the 7-year period. Again, that's a kind of a whole new show. Maybe I'm going to do a show on that in the future, on some of the specifics there. So, okay, so listen, all these reasons, and there's a few that I think are sufficient reasons, but the collective reasons here, they establish the book of Revelation, they intend a consecutive progressive framework. The concurrent recapitulatory theory fails because, it forces the trumpets and the bowls to unfold before the seventh seal is opened. The opening of the seventh seal does not culminate the day of the Lord's wrath, it initiates it. The post-trib presupposition is that the second coming begins in Revelation 19 with Christ in the sky with his armies, causing a strain, what I think causes a strain in natural reading of Scripture. This is something I talked about in the first episode. Again, and what they have to do when they begin with the presupposition that the second coming, parousia, begins with in Revelation 19, what they have to do is they have to collapse. I think that's a good term, collapse. They collapse the seals, trumpets, and bowls together to make the resurrection event in Revelation 7 happen in association with the Battle of Armageddon in Revelation 19. That's just a natural forcing of Scripture, a skewed reading in Scripture. And it's a contradiction. It's a contradiction, as I argued above. You can't place God's wrath before the seventh seal is opened. You can't do it. You can't do it before the resurrection in Revelation 7. Well, pre-wrath, I think, is the natural reading, and it takes the event of Christ in the sky with his heavenly armies preparing for the Battle of Armageddon, as this is one of the last judgment events after the trumpets and bowl judgments. We don't believe that the second coming begins with the Battle of Armageddon. That's toward the end of God's judgment. Instead, the second coming begins between the opening of the sixth and the seventh seal, when God's people receive their resurrected bodies and they enter into the Father's presence as portrayed in Revelation 7.